Spotswood are with me for this 45-minute forum. We are live streaming on Facebook, where this forum will be archived, from Herrible Hall in the Madrigano Conference Center on the Kenosha campus of Gateway Technical College. Support for WGTD's commitment to local news and public affairs, including this forum, comes from Casey Family Options, a tradition of trust. Visit caseyfamilyoptions.com. Now, a quick summary of the rules of the forum. Opening statements of up to a minute and a half in order by a coin toss just prior to airtime. Closing statements will be in inverse order. Responses to my questions may run up to 2 minutes. Candidates must remain on the question asked. Irrelevant responses will be interrupted by the moderator. That's me. I will ask follow-up questions for clarification as appropriate. Now, audience members, this next part applies to you as well, please. This is to be a respectful candidate forum conducted with decorum. So, audience members, please refrain from any clapping, booing, or other interruptions. Of course, candidates are expected to show courtesy to each other and to the moderator. Ad hominem attacks, name-calling, will be called out immediately. The moderator will warn if the speaker has violated the guidelines. If the warning is not heeded, the remaining time will be forfeited. A timekeeper is visible to aid the speakers. That's it. Let's get to the candidate's opening statements of up to 90 seconds. Candidate Bagdala won the coin toss and will go first.
Well, thank you, Len. Thank you to WGTD for the opportunity to just have this discussion here tonight. I'm running for mayor because I love Kenosha. I love this city. It's done so much for me and my family. This is where we raised our two beautiful kids, Kate and John. And I want them to have the same opportunities, if not more, that we had growing up. And make sure that they have Kenosha values. There's been a lot of talk about values lately. And let me tell you about values. Let me tell you where values come from. Well, first of all, they don't come from a party. They don't come from a book. You learn them. They're embedded in you. And I can tell you where I got my values. They're sitting right there in the front row, my mom and dad. And my father, I can tell you about my father. He said he celebrated his birthday this week. I believe, Dad, you're 39. And my dad works his tail off. Started working at Z-Bart, rust-proofing cars and working on cars back in the day. And he realized there had to be more for his family. He wanted more for his family. And so he took a $3 an hour pay cut to go work at Abbott. He worked his way up. He worked his tail off. He got to a point where they said, Hank, sorry, you can't go any further until you get a degree. You know what he did? Rolled up his sleeves. He went back to school. He got his degree. I watched him struggle. It took years, but he got there, and he provided for his family. Graduated magna cum laude. I'm proud of you, Dad. Those are the Kenosha values that I grew up with. Those are the Kenosha values I want my kids to grow up with, and I want your kids to grow up with, and I will do that as mayor. Thank you.
Candidate Lydia Spotswood, your opening statement, please.
Thank you, Len. Good evening, and thank you to Gateway Technical College, WGTD, and Len Iaquinta for hosting us this evening. I'm an honor to be a candidate for mayor, and as the first woman in Kenosha's 200-year history to seek this office. I want to thank all our citizens who have joined us and many throughout our city who've been active in the spring campaigns that are underway in our community. For those who would like to know more about my background and experience, I'd refer you to our campaign website. I will say, for shorthand, I'm the child of a union home. I'm also the wife and daughter of veterans. And I, too, grew up with values. And those values were courage, compassion, and paying it forward. As your mayor, I will prioritize the need to address growing public safety concerns, increase problems with access to health care system in our city, and the need to prioritize family-supporting jobs as the backbone of Kenosha's economy. My opponent and I have very different views about how government should work, who it should serve, and the importance of transparency and fairness in the way decisions are made at City Hall. We also have different views about how employees and citizens should be treated by elected officials at all levels of government. My opponent represents more of the status quo. I am standing for a new day in our city as a place that is welcoming, inclusive, and sustainable. I look forward to our discussion this evening.
You've brought up city government, and my first question is really about the structure of city government. Are you comfortable with the staffing levels of the way the process is working? Is there an organizational issue that you see? Tell us what you would do as mayor. We'll start with Ms. Spotswood.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. I do see some serious problems at City Hall. The city's gone for a long time without addressing some underlying needs for improved technology. Staffing levels are low in areas that are going to be crucial in the years ahead, especially as new developments are taking place. We're going to really need to beef up staffing. I think we need to upgrade our zoning ordinance, and we need to upgrade the interface between the city and developers and other people who are looking for services across the board. I also think there are real concerns I have about employees, how they've been treated over the years. I think if a pay raise doesn't exceed the cost of inflation, then it's not a pay raise. And this has been languishing for years in the city. I also hear concerns about health care and what the health care plan looks like in terms of co-pays and deductibles. There's also real concern out in our community about transparency in government. If people can come in and just have things thrown at them, things they didn't even know were coming. Last night, for example, we were at the Landlords Association. They had an agenda item on the public safety and welfare, I believe it was, and that pertained to them, and they had no advance notice that this would be happening. This is the kind of process at City Hall that needs to be changed. So I do think there are a number of issues that are happening. A project on the scale of a casino, for example, should not be coming out for a rushed vote. There are a number of other areas where I see the need for change. So as your mayor, I'll be focusing on those things, both systematic, technological, staffing levels, and interface with the public.
Thank you. Mr. Magdala.
Yeah, there needs to be several changes. I, for one, have advocated for a number of years. I've put forth plans to add staffing in a number of different departments, such as the police department, fire department. Unfortunately, a number of things are out of our control as it relates to, from a shared revenue standpoint. We've made some progress in there. This past term, we got some increase in shared revenue, which helped us be able to make some of the pay raises that we've actually been able to give to employees. Thanks to our collaboration work with folks like Representative Tip McGuire on the Joint Finance Committee, who yesterday endorsed our campaign. We've got those great partnerships and collaborations. We're going to continue to do that. But I also think we need to look at how we're communicating. One of the things I think that's lacking is a true social media presence. And we need to get out there a lot more, which means we need to actually hire a real full-time public relations person. We have them in the police department, and I think they do a great job, but we don't have anything like that at City Hall. And I think we definitely need to make sure that we're communicating effectively. It's something I've done for many, many years as an alderman, being on Facebook, holding town hall meetings, streaming them live, being on other sources like Nextdoor. One of the things I've heard over the time I've been knocking on doors is you've been out there. We love hearing from you about things that are happening. We need to do that across the whole city overall. So we need to make sure that again that we're putting our best foot forward. And I think when we do that, that means making sure that we are investing in our IT. We actually have money set aside starting next year to completely overhaul our IT system so we can make things. Process improvements, we can make things easier for developers, we can make things easier for our employees so they don't have to spend so much time at City Hall, whether they be their employees or whether they're folks who need to come in, their citizens, developers, real estate folks. That's how we're going to make things easier, but we do need to definitely increase staffing levels in a number of different areas.
Thank you. I wonder if we could drill down just a little bit more. Is there a right number of staff? Too many? Too few? The right people, maybe not in the right positions. What do you think is necessary to have the most smoothing functioning executive function for the city? Would you continue, Mr. Bagdala?
Yeah, I think we just talked about one of them. Again, in the mayor's office, I think we definitely have an opportunity, I think, to redefine how the mayor's office functions. That means we need to make sure that, again, we're out there communicating. I think one of the biggest jobs of the mayor is to be the cheerleader for this community. That's something I've done as an alderman in my district. I think we need to continue to do that as mayor. And I will continue to do that if I'm fortunate enough to be elected. I also think we need to make sure that we have appropriate staff levels for public safety. Right now, I don't believe we have the adequate staffing from a public safety standpoint, both in police and fire. Our firefighters right now, I was asked at a previous debate, what keeps you up at night? And the thing that keeps me most up at night is the fact that our firefighters are running ragged, where there are times when we don't have adequate fire protection and rescue squad service for the city. We're waiting for other areas to come in and fill the void in that. We just can't have that as a city of our size. So we need to make sure that we're staffing up on the fire side. We need to staff up another med unit. That means we're going to have to add at least 12 more firefighters over the course of the next couple of years in order so we can start building that. And the one thing was mentioned about the casino, one good thing about having that is having the dollars actually to do that. We talked earlier about not having some of the finances to be able to do those things. Now, when that comes to fruition, we actually have money specifically set aside to add the services I think that we need as it relates to medical service. So that's something that I will definitely push for as mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Spotswood, what would you evaluate the mayor's office as being and the personnel situation for running the city?
Yes, thank you, Lena. I'm less inclined to drill down into the administration as I am to drill down into departments that are going to be crucial as new development is moving forward. I think Public Works, City Development, City Inspections, the Office of the City Attorney, and the Finance Departments all need to be upgraded, updated. We have personnel ready, in fact, in some places overdue for retirement. So we're going to need to really delve into how we staff those areas and how technology may impact. One of the things I think that my opponent and I agree on is that technology has languished. Unfortunately, that's happened on his watch, and it's been going on for many, many years. So I think these are specific departments where I would target improvements, both in the way we're regulating and the way we're managing workflow, and technology can improve that dramatically, not just within the city, but between the city hall and our constituents. With respect to the expectation that has been pumped out there by my opponent, I have real concerns about the hold. The hold is the amount of money that the casino is going to retain at the end of each day. And these numbers that have been put out into the public about revenues that are expected when $80 million is 3% of the hold is $2.7 billion. So that really concerns me. I think there have been expectations created about these revenues coming forward, and I'm very skeptical about that, and I think a different financing formula should have been thought through. I think that's it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, let me change topics a little bit, and we'll turn to Mr. Bagdala to answer this. The downtown vision, we're making progress. Things are happening. Shovels are turning over dirt, some rather large shovels, as a matter of fact. Is there anything more the city can do to speed the process of implementing the downtown vision? Is it proceeding on pace? Should it be going faster? Should it be going slower? How's it going? And what could speed it up? Because the benefits won't happen until we have some buildings up.
Should be going much faster. I think, unfortunately, that's one of the things that that you hear from developers out in this community. And I've heard it for years as an alderman. And again, I think we have to define the role of an alderman is taking care of their district. I don't put out the budget. I've advocated for the budget. I've been told by my opponent and others that when you actually put forth things, you're meddling. So you can't have it both ways. Either it's on my watch or it's or we're over meddling. So it's kind of one or the other. But one of the things I think that's important that we need to do is we need to streamline our development process. I think it's far too complicated and complex now. And I think when you talk to developers out there, they can see that it is there's no reason why a development takes 12 months in Kenosha and in Pleasant Prairie or other places it takes 3 or 4 months. There's definitely a problem that we have in that process, and we need to make sure to look at that. And that's why you have to hire somebody that actually has the public sector experience to do that. I've done that in my 26 years at Abbott. I've brought forth and worked on projects to streamline many different processes across an operations, and we can do that here. And one of the first things I plan to do is to bring forth different folks from the real estate community, from citizen groups, from developers to say, how are we, let's look at this and cut out the waste. There's a much better way to do this if we sit down and actually collaborate and do that, and then let government get out of the way and let the businesses thrive. We want to have high standards. We don't want to cut corners. We want to make sure that we have the best development that we can. But I think that's really what's really important, is to make sure that we're doing that. I've demonstrated that both in the private sector and public sector, and I think that's what's needed moving forward. That's why groups like the South Shore Realtors Association have endorsed our campaign, because they know they need to make sure to have a leader in office that actually understands that, has a history of doing it, and will do it in the next 4 years. Thank you.
Thanks. Ms. Spotswood, your response.
So your question is the slow pace of development downtown. I think more than any other single thing, it's the interest rates in this country that are affecting capital stack for new projects. And developers and investors have to work with interest rates, and it's a tough game to analyze, to figure out, you know, when and how you can proceed. We have been making really serious progress in the downtown in the last few years. We have 4 new buildings already completed. We have 3 more buildings that we have approved that are going to represent hundreds of apartments. That step is crucial because new businesses, existing businesses, depend often in downtown areas on foot traffic. So the city is obviously working very hard to move these projects forward. But we actually circle back to your prior question when you asked that, and that is staffing levels at City Hall. When you can't get enough people in, you know, to their chairs to do the work, a lot of plans, a lot of development activity, inspections, which are crucial in new development, for example, you don't want elevators that only work some of the time. You need to have inspections that are being done. Also, you have complex agreements that have to be worked through, both from a financial standpoint as well as from a legal standpoint. You want to be protecting taxpayer interests in these new projects. So I would say the biggest rate limiting step is the capacity of developers in terms of the number of personnel, the number of projects they can manage, but also what they have in the way of ready capital and then the capital stack.
Thank you very much. We're going to continue and let you answer the next question first. The topic of the casino was something you mentioned just a few moments ago. So let me ask you to go a little more deeply into the casino topic. What is it about the casino that the mayor needs to be managing, and what is it that the public needs to know about it in terms of the process as it moves forward, mm-hmm. and how will you approach that whole process in the future?
Well, first, Len, it remains to be seen how much authority the mayor is going to have in this project going forward. An intergovernmental agreement has already been achieved both with the city and the county, and the mayor's job really is going to be to make sure the city is holding their feet to the fire with respect to the details of the intergovernmental agreement. I see some flaws in the way that was developed. My opponent and I disagree about whether the Seminole should have some sort of agreement either directly with the city or an addendum to the existing agreement to assure the city, since they're the bank for the project, they're the builder of the project, and then the operator of the project. It is crucial that the city can interact directly with them over compliance with the IGA. A good simple example is making sure that employees there can unionize. That I think is basic, especially when a lot of those jobs will be low-wage jobs. That protection, I think, should be available, and the city has to have a way to assure that that's going on. But there are other elements of the plan that also have to be enforced. My second concern, as I mentioned a moment ago, is what it's going to actually bring in. I think the amount of dollars that have been portrayed as coming in have been somewhat overblown. In year 9, for example, the casino will have to have over $700,000 in the hold on every average day of a year. That makes no sense. I don't see how that's conceivable, and that's why I would have indexed this to tax base as opposed to what we call a cut of the action. So I think that was a flawed approach to the financing.
Thank you very much. Mr. Rigdala, would you like to drill down into the casino and how you would oversee that project?
Again, as someone who actually helped negotiate this intergovernmental agreement, I think it's very solid. I think it protects the taxpayer. I think it protects the city. But it also makes sure that we're dealing with the Menominee tribe. That's who is running the casino. Now you're going to have the Seminole and the Hard Rock are going to be managing the kind of the day-to-day. But the Menominee tribe is the ones here in Kenosha. They're the ones who are benefiting from it. They're the ones who we've been negotiating with. They're the ones who are going to receive the funds from that long term. And so we need to make sure that it's transparent. One of the things that I was actually proud of is when it finally came forward for a vote, we put a stop to it and make sure that people could actually hear the discussion, read the intergovernmental agreement. I've read all 82 pages of the document. I think it was very well constructed. We had our own Native American attorney who actually, again, is an expert in that field. We went out and got somebody who knows how to deal with those. So that's what I think you have to do. So in terms of the details of implementation, again, a contract's a contract. I've written many of them. I've reviewed many of them over the years. And they have a contract, and we have an agreement with them that this is what they're supposed to do. If they're not doing it, we have to enforce it. It's as simple as that. When you sign an intergovernmental agreement, again, you're signing an intergovernmental agreement with the Menominee tribe. We've done that. The county has done the same thing. That's how you're going to make sure that these things get done. And if they don't, well, then we're gonna take it to court. And guess what? In the court of law, they're going to lose. So it's very, again, the protections are there for the taxpayer. The protections are there for the developers. And I think that at the end of the day, we've mitigated most of the risk to this area. There obviously is risk in any development, but I think we've done a great job in bringing this forward, and I think it's going to serve the public for years to come.
Thank you very much. I'd like to move on via the role of the chief executive of any organization or polity needs to be able to take stock what's going well, what's not going so well, and then formulate a plan to do something about it. Mr. Bagdala, what is the city of Kenosha doing well? What is it doing not so well? What would be your action plan at this point of your knowledge of the job that you would do?
I think the biggest thing we talked about earlier, I think what we're not doing well is on communication. And I say that as a whole. Now, there are obviously pockets. As I said, I think the police department does a great job. Other areas, other departments, I think the libraries do a great job. But we do not communicate effectively. When you look at all of these things, again, whether it's the casino, whether it's any other types of development or things that are going on, what happened back in 2020, the major issue that I had with that was how we communicated. I thought it was very poor. We were not effective in our communication because we don't have no social media presence. So that needs to change. I think that's a big problem. I think what we're doing well, and I think we've talked about it here, I think we've got a number of key developments where we're reinventing ourselves. You know, Kenosha's gone through a lot over the years. I was just talking to someone the other day and they, said, who would have thought that looking back 3.5 years ago, where Kenosha would be at this point? I think most people had sort of written it off and said, oh my gosh, that happened and we're never gonna go anywhere. We have turned around this city. We are on the right track. There are a lot of great things that are happening. Yes, we definitely have our problems. We have things we need to work on. But at the end of the day, Kenosha is pointed in the right direction. Now the biggest challenge is making sure that we elect the right leader who can continue to drive the success that we're doing and drive the change that we're talking about that we need to do. I believe I'm that person. I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Thank you. Ms. Botswood, what's your evaluation?
So first, I want to make sure we all understand I was part of driving change not so very long ago when we had to completely reinvent the economy of Kenosha, Wisconsin, having gone from an assembly plant and auto manufacturing to the modern economy that we have here was a Herculean task for the City Council. I helped lead those changes. Among those things were the development of the marina and creating an operating marina, leading the development of the Business Park of Kenosha, things like the Community Health Center, a number of other projects in the city. The work that we did created over $2 billion in economic expansion and thousands of jobs. So I have firsthand experience doing this kind of leadership in the city. I've also been a city council president. If you look at our two resumes on our websites, you're going to see I have far more experience and a broader scope of experience than my opponent in this. I think the things that are going well in the city's got a forward look right now. We are working very hard to expand both homes in the city and economic expansion is important. We're falling down a bit on healthcare. I think what is emerging in the downtown area is a healthcare desert. When we moved here, when my husband was recruited, his job was 5 minutes away from our home. Now it's all the way out by the interstate. So the people who are living in the older part of the city, the central city, are finding that they no longer have doctors who are as accessible as they were. So I'm looking forward, since I've had a hand in healthcare in our city in multiple ways in the past, I'm looking forward to working with our healthcare community to reverse this trend. I think all parts of the city should feel that access to healthcare is viable and reasonable.
Thank you. Let's take another little turn. The chief executive also needs to have vision and imagine what could be better and what could be accomplished. Otherwise, nothing happens. So for the benefit of our community, do you think there are areas where the city and the county should be working together, working jointly, in addition to current initiatives to address the economy and the quality of life? Ms. Spotswood?
Absolutely, Len. I enjoy a good relationship with our county executive, Samantha Kirkman. She and I are from very different political viewpoints, but we have found a good friendship and a good working relationship that I anticipate with her. I believe the County Alice study, for example, can point the way toward the kinds of improvements, the kinds of issues that are going on countywide. Many of them are concentrated in the city of Kenosha. So, the number one issue was access to health care, and that's an area where I excel. And thankfully, because I've worked with Samantha in the past, I should be able to work with her to address that problem, particularly in the city of Kenosha. It is a countywide problem. Public safety was the second issue in the Alice report, and public safety is another area where I know about the endorsements, sir, but the reality is I've chaired public safety and welfare. That's police, fire, and housing. And public safety is more than just how long it takes a police officer to get somewhere. It's also about the opioid crisis, okay? Access to health care is also part of public safety. You'll find that I'm going to be a very strong advocate for both first responders and for community-based organizations that are critical to preventing some of the social issues and the crime problems that we see in the city. I think I've run out of time. No? Okay. So I see a broader table, a broader array of issues to address public safety. And then affordable housing is an area where I'm very deeply involved in the city of Kenosha right now.
Thank you. Mr. McDowell?
Well, thanks. I want to make sure I am the only candidate that is endorsed by public safety, both Kenosha Police and Kenosha Fire. And they do that because they know, they look at who has the better vision, who has demonstrated the better leadership over the last couple of years. Yes, my opponent, chair of the Public Safety and Welfare Committee, back when Bill Clinton was president. Lots of things have changed since then. We talk about technology and different things. The world is very different, and we need to make sure that we understand that, and we actually have a history of actually bringing forth new technology services to help our public safety officials. Now, in terms of working with the county, I definitely see when we were looking at our IT systems and overall with joint services, there are definitely some things that joint services does well, but I think overall and from an IT perspective, we definitely need to work on how that's going to be. I've said very clearly that when you look at the IT system in the county and what we have, they're two completely different things, but we do a lot of similar things. And so there could definitely be some synergies between the county clerk's office, for example, and the city clerk's office. They both handle elections, they both handle taxes, all those things. We could definitely do things and collaborate a lot better, I think, if we work together. We can collaborate in terms of the systems that we use as well. And I've talked to our city clerk as well as our county clerk, and they've recognized that there's definitely opportunities for them to work together in. But again, it takes somebody who actually has been there, who has been on the job most recently, who does have the most broad experience in both public and private sector, managing large budgets, managing large departments, and having a global perspective. My job is crisis management. I deal with that every single day across the globe. I know what's happening. I communicate effectively with my colleagues around the globe, and that's what's needed here, showing that vision, demonstrating a vision, and making sure that we're communicating effectively to our colleagues around the city and county.
Thank you. Ms. Spotswood, what's your take on this topic?
Can you repeat the question? Because I got lost. Sure. And sort of took a lot of detours here.
For the betterment of our community, Are there other areas that, in addition to what's going on currently, where the city and the county should be working together to improve the economy and the quality of life? Okay, sorry.
I did answer that, Lynn. I'm sorry.
You got it.
Is that me or you?
Sorry.
I mean, I don't mind answering again, but I thought I just answered that.
I lapsed.
And the crowd approves of that.
let's move on to the next question, which is in a similar vein. The mayor has quite a pulpit to work from. How, as mayor, would you approach working with the Kenosha Unified School District, our neighboring villages and towns, for their economic development, their quality of life, for our school system in this area?
That's a great question, actually, because that is a major role that the mayor plays in our community, but also a voice that's heard very loudly in our neighboring communities. Again, I hearken back to the casino, where neighboring communities felt completely left out of the loop in the way it was presented, the details of the plan. They were learning about this project in the newspaper. That's the wrong kind of communication for a mayor to be engaged in. So first and foremost, I think it's about relationships being formed, and I have very strong relationships with our neighbors. And you know, sort of having periodic meetings with each other where you're catching up on what's going on, what kind of interfaces may need to be reevaluated or imagined. And one of the things that I love about the Office of Mayor is the potential for creative action, not only within our city, but beyond our city. I was involved, I know this is going to burn you, but way back when we were working on expenditure restraint and a number of other programs that allowed, for example, the Village of Pleasant Prairie to come into being. So I've worked across boundaries, both during my time as alderman, but also in recent years, as my opponent knows. So I think we do have real opportunities to work together. I'm excited about that prospect. Many of the projects that need to be done cross boundaries, and some of the improvements that I've seen is having reached a boundary agreement with many of these neighboring communities. So I'm looking forward to that. I think the mayor can be a good partner, and I think we need to have a strong relationship, but not overbearing. We need to be mutually respectful.
Thank you. Mr. McDowell?
Yeah, I think it really is it's about relationships. And again, I think it's important that you've been there and demonstrated those working relationships today. You know, again, that was great that we had some, you know, back when Pleasant Prairie was being incorporated, which unfortunately I think it was bad for us, the city, long term. But they're there now. We deal with that. And I think the mayor would agree with that. I think a lot of legislators back in the day would agree with that. But I think it is about the relationships that you have, the current relationships with people, and demonstrated how to work with that. One of the first things when Mayor Antoramian came back in office is we said we need to have a much more stronger boundary agreements with our neighboring peers. And we did that. And we brought that together. We brought forth folks from Summers, Bristol, Paris. We brought them all together. We actually met at Indian Trail High School. We brought everybody together, and we negotiated, I think, a fair deal for not just the city, but all the other villages and towns within the area. That's how you do cooperation. That's how you do that. You build those bridges. You have those relationships. You're not afraid to sit down and have the tough discussions, which we did, and I think it was beneficial for everybody. But it's also demonstrating how you actually, again, what you do today. I'm one of the very few aldermen that has town hall meetings. Where we actually sit down and have conversations, where we talk about this is what's happening in our district, this is what's happening in the city, and making sure that people have a clear understanding of what it is. I will continue to do that as mayor, but again, obviously not focused on my district anymore, but by the city overall. And we invite everyone to come in and talk. I think those and all those should be streamed on social media so that those folks who can't be there can go, because they want to, again, we talked earlier about, you know, what's not going well, and we want to make sure we're communicating to our partners around this area, because that's how you're going to get things done. That's how you're going to bring people together. I've had a history of doing that for 16 years on city council. I'll continue to do that as mayor.
Thank you. I almost hate to bring it up because we've talked about it so many times and in so many venues, but housing is on the lips of everyone, I meat in Kenosha County. It's the perennial issue, and probably talked about more today than any time I can ever remember in my lifetime here. So could you be a little more specific? What role can the city take in promoting or building affordable housing? I know it's not all in the hands of the city, but the city has leverage. How might you use that, Mr. McDowell?
Well, I think we're already doing that, Len. I mean, we talked about it here, and we talked about it in other places before. I think the role of government, and I think the role of the city, is to set the agenda, set the parameters, and then get out of the way and let developers have come in and have access. Again, I think we need, as I said before, we need to make sure that we have very strong standards as it relates to, you know, what gets built. We definitely don't want to see, you know, poor construction or bad things that are happening in terms of how those are going. So we need to have high standards, but we also need to make sure that we're good for development. And I think, again, if you talk to folks in the development world, the real estate community, they will tell you it is tough to do business in Kenosha. That's why they tend to go to other places. Now, again, I think we have succeeded in spite of ourselves. But I think we could do a lot better. And again, that's why I said I think what we need to do is, you know, look at the time frame it takes to bring these developments forward. We need to make sure that we're partnering with these various developers to make sure that we are a partner with them, that we're not continuing to add on. What I've heard so many times over the years is that a developer comes in and the city staff tells them these are the 10 things you need to do, and then they leave, and then they get a phone call 3 weeks later and says, by the way, I need 5 more things. And then 3 weeks later, they got 5 more things. We need to make sure that we set the table and then get out of the way. You look at Pleasant Prairie, they have a meeting where they come bring everybody together at the table. They say, these are the things we need you to do for this development. Everybody agrees, and they walk out, and they see them again at the ribbon cutting. That's, I think, how you're going to continue to get more development and attract developers who, unfortunately, have left this community because it's difficult to do business in. We're situated perfectly to take advantage of the opportunity here if we make sure that we recognize and have processes and procedures in place that are welcoming and inviting to developers, and we'll continue to do that.
Ms. Spotswood.
So speaking to the question of affordable housing, I think the place you have to begin, is this my mic again? Okay. The place you have to begin is by understanding the law of supply and demand. In our city right now, we have about 2.7 months of inventory. A healthy real estate inventory is about 6 months of inventory. And what that means is that as demand is growing and inventory has shrunk, prices are high. Now, when we talk about affordable, generally the federal government identifies that as 1/3 of somebody's income would be what they're paying in a mortgage or rent. As you can tell, if you've got shrinking prices or shrinking inventory and you have rising prices, it puts our market in a very bad place. Can you hear me? Is it there? Okay. I'm afraid hurting people's ears here. Yeah. Okay. Are we okay? Should I proceed?
Give it a try.
I'll try. Okay, so the first is law of supply and demand. That's affecting inventory price or in flux. The second is the rate at which development can take place. The other thing is partners and who are working with. Habitat for Humanity is working very hard, but we don't have many partners in this, and we need to fix that. And part of it is learning how to work with developers to streamline systems, to work with materials, and ways that they can do construction. We have to go back into the building code in a number of places and revise, and we have to expand the effort that's going on. I really want to emphasize one thing, and that is that if we just hope it'll happen through market forces, it's not going to happen. The city has to be very proactive in this space.
Thank you. I apologize for the feedback.
I'm scared.
We're approaching the end of our time, so I'm going to ask you to just comment a little bit and just take a minute or less. We've all read about a $3 million donation from Uline to help with housing. Ms. Spotswood, do you want to talk about that, what the importance of that is from your standpoint?
Yes, thanks, Len. I'm glad you asked that. I serve currently on the Redevelopment Authority, and while I know my opponent is dismissive of citizen service on boards and commissions, I'm serving on five right now. I serve on more active committees and boards of the city of Kenosha than some members of the Common Council. Four of those areas specifically are dealing with housing. I think, you know, we're talking about housing, we're talking about a range of issues that have to be addressed. I am not somebody who was in government a long time ago. I'm in government right now, and I'm doing the work side by side, in fact, a few seats away from each other on the Plan Commission. So my opponent knows this full well, and I'm sorry that he feels dismissive, because if we're going to change the culture of City Hall, we have to get more diversity on those boards.
Can you tell me something about Uline, though?
Okay, circling back to Uline, the Redevelopment Authority is going to play a very large part in the Uptown East project, and I'm glad to receive private contributions. I hope to see a lot more of that.
Great. Mr. Bigdala?
Well, I have to add, I have to respond to that. So I don't dismiss anybody who works in a committee. I do dismiss, again, my opponent, who likes to brag that she serves on all these boards and commissions. Just last night, she said she's outside the bubble. She's not in the bubble, but sometimes she's in the bubble, out of the bubble. I can't figure out what it is. Mm-hmm. Either you're doing the work that this city is asking you to do, or you're not. Yes, the mayor has asked her to sit on many of these boards and commissions. That's great. But he's endorsed our campaign for mayor because he knows that we're the right leader to move this city forward. Now, as it relates to the housing of $3 million, again, it's a project that the mayor and I and a number of others on council have worked on. I think it's a great. We're going to match that $3 million to ensure we're actually building single-family homes again in the older neighborhoods, which is how you stabilize neighborhoods. That's how you stabilize them. You make them more affordable. We deed restrict those properties so that they can't be a rental unit, or they can only be owner-occupied, and make sure that we're actually delivering on the American dream and helping people get single-family homes and own their own home in Kenosha. That's what we're going to do.
Thank you. And now, our time has slipped away, and it's time for us to call for your closing statements. And candidate Lydia Spotswood will make her closing statement of up to 1 minute right now.
Right. So with respect to bubble or no bubble, I want to make it clear, from my point of view, if you're largely concerned within City Hall but not really active out in the community, you tend to get kind of a bubble mentality. And you get overly focused on the politics within that bubble rather than being open to new ideas and input from the community. Now, I'm running for mayor because I love Kenosha. My husband and I have made this our home for nearly 40 years. We raised our three children here, and I want to say it's humbling to live alongside resilient, hardworking people who build up and care for each other individually, through local organizations, and in faith communities across our city. I believe elected officials must partner with and nurture these bonds in every neighborhood. Tonight, I ask for your vote. That's the only endorsement that really matters to me. As your mayor, I pledge to work every day to establish our shared vision for Kenosha's future. I believe through respectful and collaborative partnerships, we can and will create the change we want to see in our community together.
Thank you. Mr. Bigdala, you get the last word.
Well, thank you, Len, and thank you for hosting a great discussion. Thank you, Lydia, for being here tonight. I always find it funny that people dismiss endorsements when they don't get any, and I'm proud to have received many endorsements, including Mayor Antaramian, Representative Tip McGuire, Kenosha Police and Fire, Kenosha AFL-CIO, Kenosha South Shore Realtors Association, and a number of folks who were here just a couple of months ago supporting this campaign. And they do so because they know that they need a mayor who has the demonstrated leadership, experience, and integrity to run this city. I've done that the last 16 years. I've also demonstrated that in my 26 years working in Abbott, managing budgets, managing large operations. That's what's needed in Kenosha. We're going to change Kenosha's culture. We're going to do it. We're going to make sure that this is a safer, stronger, or more prosperous Kenosha in a bipartisan fashion. And even though this is my opponent is running a partisan race, we're going to continue to do things in a nonpartisan fashion in Kenosha. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to our candidates who have consented to be with us tonight to help elucidate the public. We appreciate that, and we appreciate your service very much, both of you. And thanks to our timekeeper and our staff here who have worked very hard to make this forum possible. Don't forget, the April 2nd is the date of the general election, Tuesday, April 2nd. This forum was sponsored by KC Family Options. For information on how to get started in pre-planning, visit kcfamilyoptions.com. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, once again urging you to get informed, get involved, and get out and vote on Tuesday, April 2nd. Good day.
The preceding program was recorded Thursday night in Haribo Hall on Gateway's Kenosha campus. A video version of the forum, along with a Kenosha School Board Candidates Forum that followed, is available on WGTV.